This is the West Texas Dispatch. I'm George Levesque. Texas is growing, that we know, but Texas is a big state. Where are we growing? What's the future look like for those of us in West Texas? Lloyd Potter has been the Texas State demographer for the last 15 years, and he joins us right now. Lloyd, thank you so much for giving us some time today.
It's good to be with you today. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, we're glad to have you, and I saw that your office just released brand new numbers and projections for the state of Texas over the next several decades. Can you give us kind of some of the highlights?
Well, I mean, so the release that today is more specific to counties. We've released the state projections some time ago, but then it's really involved to actually do the projections at the level that we do them. So we produce population projections out 40 years, and then we do that by age and sex and race and ethnicity. So when we do that down at the county level, as you can imagine, Texas has 254 counties, and there's a lot of variability in terms of the characteristics and composition, you know, from county to county. So it's much more involved to produce the county level projections. And we've also dramatically improved the methodology and the process that we've been using. So we're feeling, relatively speaking, much better about these projections. One of the things we do know about our projections is that they're wrong. You know, they might not be very wrong. And in fact, if you look at our projections coming up to the 2020 census, we were actually the census had us undercounted by a little bit, and our projection actually hit the closer to the number what we estimated to be the true number of Texas population. So we think our projections are pretty good, but again, there's always some degree of error, and especially when you get to smaller geographic areas, some of the smaller counties, you know, we know that there's some error associated with our projections.
You know, you speak of the smaller counties, and just kind of going through the counties that I looked at today, some of the bigger counties, they're showing continued growth. And then you get to these rural West Texas counties that most of the counties in our area, and they're showing decreases in population over the next 30, 40 years.
Right. Yeah. So most of the counties that are largely rural in nature, I mean, so if you look at Taylor, which has it's a very sizable urban area. But if you look at the counties surrounding, they tend to be largely agricultural is the kind of the major economic base there. And the net result of that being the economic base is that it's not really both attracting as well as holding young people to age up, you know, into the population. So what we have happening in many of the rural parts of the state is young people age up through high school. And then if they want to go to post-secondary, or if they want to find a job that's kind of perhaps higher paid or kind of not working on the farm or ranch, they're going to move to an urbanized area. And so the net result of that is you don't have younger people in these rural areas aging up into the childbearing years. And so they're having children, and they've moved to the more urbanized area, and that's where they're having their children. And then the other part of that is that you have fewer younger people, and the net result is, as a proportion, you have more older people. So you have an aging population in much of rural Texas. And so when we look at population change, you know, two of the major components are births and deaths over time. Mm-hmm. And so if you have not many births, because the young people are in the urban areas, and an aging population, so you have more deaths, you end up having natural decrease. And then for the migration component, which is the third element of population change, you have, for many of these counties, net out migration. That changed a little bit for some rural counties coming out of the pandemic, but kind of that, I'm not seeing that as something that looks like it's really sustained right now. So we're somewhat optimistic that, you know, the trend toward being able to work remotely and so on and so forth, that was going to potentially result in turnaround of some of this population decline and slowing of population growth. But Right now, we're not so sure that's going to hold and coming out of the pandemic. Because again, if you look at a lot of businesses, a lot of them are kind of like, yeah, we're not going to do remote work anymore. Or we're going to really limit the amount of remote work. So you're starting to see, I think, that trend toward people being able to work remotely and wanting to move into a more rural area, slowing.
One of the big questions that we have, Lloyd, is you take a look at Taylor County, and you've got the biggest infrastructure project in the country being built right now, $500 billion. It's gigantic. Obviously, tons of influx while it's being built, but a big question about what it would bring to this county once it's done, because it wouldn't need as many employees. The computer, I guess, does its own work. I guess that's part of AI. But how does that figure into your equation? Something like that it's really kind of hard to know.
Yeah, no, that's a good point, and that's we tend to run into that in a number of counties. Another one that we ran into was Grayson County, because they have like this huge AI or no chip factory that's being built up there, which is up north of Dallas, up north of Collin County. So our projection doesn't build that in. I mean, because the inputs into our projections are births, deaths, and migration, and we kind of look at the historic trends and we carry those forward. The approach, and we've explored this a little bit, but we haven't kind of been able to move it forward yet, is what we refer to as more of an economic forecast. And then you use the economic forecast so it's a different approach, and we call it forecasting as opposed to projecting, because the projecting is the births, deaths, and migration. But the forecasting would be like, okay, so we think in 10 years there's going to be this many jobs. There are going to be this many jobs. We need to have these many people. How many people do we think we're going to have? And so we can estimate or project how many people we think we're going to have. And if we need more than that, then you add those people. And then, of course, each one of the workers is going to have a partner, a spouse, maybe a child or two. And so you kind of have that multiplier in terms of the population growth. So that's another approach that allows you to kind of incorporate more knowledge about economic factors that you think are going to happen.
That is very enlightening. Lloyd, we really appreciate you joining us today and kind of telling us the methodology and some of the results from the latest numbers. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Lloyd Potter, longtime state demographer. As we look into the future of Abilene, the Big Country, and West Texas, KACU remains committed to bringing you stories that are vital to this region. It's our pleasure to put the time into building this local show each week. But it takes community support to make the West Texas Dispatch possible. Here's how you can help.
Visit kacu.org and use the donate button or donate on the mobile app.
People who live in West Texas might take the night sky for granted. But for astronomers and photographers across the globe, these skies are something extraordinary. KACU's Josiah Wannell has more on why this region is one of the best places in the country for astrophotography and how a new observatory gives people everywhere a chance to experience it.
Light pollution is so pervasive that most people don't really engage with the night sky in the way that we all used to.
Bray Falls is the co-founder of Starfront Observatories.
Talk to any random person like in a city, they may have never even seen the Milky Way before at all.
Starfront Observatories opened last year near a tiny town about an hour south of Abilene.
This is the largest scope of the observatory that we're working on right now. It's a 24-inch F3 newt. We got Nereides, the supernova remnant, to show up in a single 5-minute subframe. So this thing's got some beastly light collecting capability, and we're going to put it to work. Hopefully do some science stuff with it in collaboration with the Planetary Science Institute. Maybe a little NASA, who knows. We're gonna try to do some real stuff with that scope.
Bray Falls says the project offers stargazers a chance to enjoy the views of the night sky above Texas from wherever they are.
We provide access to dark skies, really good observing conditions, at a way that's accessible in a way that it hasn't ever been before.
Here's how it works. Instead of traveling to West Texas, people send their telescopes to the observatory, then log in from anywhere in the world to use them.
If they're in an apartment, they don't have a backyard to set up a telescope. No matter what their situation is, they have the accessibility to actually do the hobby they love the most, which is astronomy.
That's true for Carlos Garcia, an astrophotographer who checks his telescope from his home in Miami.
I live in Miami, Florida. Very light polluted city, and I'm in a suburb of Kendall, which is, you know, a very light polluted area.
Garcia says it's more than just convenience.
It was like 2 or 3 days. I was already up and running, fully connected to the internet. I could log into it from my computer in Miami, even from my iPhone.
Fall's inspiration to build Starfront came from his own early experiences with the night sky.
As soon as I picked up the telescope and a camera, I just wanted to share photos of what I was seeing with friends and family.
That passion grew into Starfront's mission to make the universe more accessible to everyone. Local experts like longtime astrophotographer Paul Wertheim says West Texas is uniquely suited for this kind of project.
Probably two things. One is lack of large cities. You have Abilene, Lubbock, Midland, Odessa, not really huge cities, but they're spread apart. But then also just the amount of wide open space.
Altitude and geography matter too, according to ACU astronomy and physics professor Donald Eisenhower.
As you go further west, the air gets drier above. By the time you get to West Texas, the main difference is altitude. The lower you go, the worse it is. So as you head toward the coast, things are worse.
Starfront's co-founder Brave Falls says choosing West Texas was about finding the perfect balance of natural and modern resources.
So the skies are really dark. It's clear for most of the year, so it's pretty dry out here. But also it has really good infrastructure, which makes scaling this business important. Like, we have good power. We have fiber internet, which is super critical for us because we had hundreds of customers logging in remotely and moving tons of image files around.
That rare mix makes West Texas ideal for building what Fall says is now the world's largest remote observatory by the amount of telescopes. Fall says it's rewarding to help people connect with the night sky they may have never truly seen. Capturing images from the heavens can be moving. Paul Wertheim says astrophotography has a way of opening people's eyes in moments like that.
To see things that most people just don't see, particularly if you've grown up in cities most of your life. People go to Big Ben. If you look at comments on TripAdvisor or people post on Facebook about their trip to Big Ben, one of the things that stands out is that they've never seen so many stars when they look up.
At Starfront, Fall says his team works with people at every level, from beginners just starting out to seasoned astrophotographers.
We answer everyone's questions, whether or not they're like a total beginner, all the way up to like someone super experienced. We handle all walks of the astrophotography life.
Hundreds of people have placed their equipment at the Starfront Observatory. And with so many telescopes under one roof, automation is key to keeping them safe.
So we have an automated roof system here that is constantly watching for if it gets cloudy or if it gets rainy, if there's too much wind, if there's too much humidity or moisture. The roofs will close themselves.
The remote telescopes of Starfront, trained on the wide-open skies of West Texas, reveal that this is one of the best places in the country to look up. And thanks to technology, more people than ever can share that view. I'm Josiah Winnell in Abilene.
KACU brings you local reporting you don't get anywhere else. Whether it's a look at the region's environment, economy, education, or elections, KACU is committed to covering stories worth saving. Please help to make this important public service possible with a donation to the home of the West Texas Dispatch, KACU. Here's how.
Visit KACU.org and use the donate button or donate on the mobile app.
This is the West Texas Dispatch. We heard earlier this hour about the potential for significant growth in West Texas in the coming years. One part of the big country that's been growing in the past few years is Brownwood. New businesses have joined the downtown economy, and the city built a new event space that offers both indoor and outdoor venues. That space is going to host the second annual Feels Like Home Festival this weekend, and we've got Steve Clayton. He's the festival director to join us and talk about what this is all about. Steve, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, thanks for having me, George.
All right, Steve, what is Feels Like Home and how big is this thing?
Feels Like Home is, really a celebration of what Brownwood is all about and what Brownwood has to offer, Brownwood, Texas, that is. Feels Like Home is a one-day, 11-band festival, music festival, with 10 of the best pit masters from all over Texas, really kind of brought together to craft a unique experience for attendees. So we're really looking forward to it.
So the name is Feels Like Home, and how does that tie in with what you guys are doing?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, Feels Like Home really was, is the mantra or the catchphrase of the city of Brownwood. Brownwood, Texas really wants to make people feel like this is a great place to, you know, have a home, be, you know, call home, open a business. And really, you know, Feels Like Home Festival is meant to do that. Is it's meant to bring people into Brownwood from all over and let people experience what Brownwood has to offer by showing them some great music and craft barbecue.
11 bands, two different stages. Is that correct?
Yeah, we have two stages. You know, it's kind of unique because the city of Brownwood built this beautiful event center and festival lawn. And we're utilizing a lot of their infrastructure for this. And so, you know, we have our main stage, Feels Like Home main stage. And then we have our side stage, which is thankfully, you know, put together by our friends at Pioneer Tap House.
So is this thing growing? I mean, your second year, you've got a lot of bands attendance wise.
Yeah. I mean, it really is. It's actually, you know, when I get to talk to people about the birth cycle and growth cycle of a festival, you know, you have your year one, you have your year one woes, right? But it's not really woes. It's just the cost of building a brand and building something special, right? That, you know, that costs money, whether you're building a festival or you're building an office building or you're building a bar or a restaurant. I mean, it costs money to build that infrastructure and build that brand and reputation. And so, you know, after year one, you know, you have all these consumers that have experienced it and they had a good time. And that's the main point, is making sure that everyone left having a really positive experience. And so now you come to year two and you can just see the growth of the quantity of attendees and you know, the truth of the matter. I mean, we ended up selling out VIP a week or two ago, which, you know, we actually increased capacity by about 100 people.
Wow.
For last year. So so it's kind of a testament to you know, the positive community response and engagement that we're getting from attendees. But we still have ways to go, and we you know, we still have space in our general admission and general admission plus areas. And you know, it's a great opportunity to come in and get to experience the festival.
Well, let's talk about that, Steve. And folks want to buy tickets. How do they do it? Can they just show up? Do they need to do it online in advance?
Well, both, George. I mean, you know, you can buy it in advance and you save, you know, $5 or $10 by doing so, or you can show up and buy it in person. So we have a couple thousand left available for general admission, only a couple hundred left for general admission plus, and we're sold out of VIP. So, you know, the higher tiered experiences went first, and, you know, we probably will sell out of barbecue and general admission plus, but we still have plenty of availability in general admission.
Steven, thanks for telling us about your event.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity, George.
Steven Clayton, the festival director for the Feels Like Home Festival in Brownwood. Gates open at noon this Saturday. That's October 4th. You can check our social media for links to the festival and tickets. It's time for West Texas Roots. On this episode of West Texas Roots, Larry Wheeler shares the history of the Abilene Community Theater, reflecting on how building sets builds community and why the arts remain vital to our lives together.
An opportunity came to be technical director for a theater program in Plainview, Wayland Baptist University in Plainview. I applied and I got it, and it seemed like everything I had studied thus far just kind of wove together, being theater and in a Christian school, kind of just everything fit together. So I was there for 4 years, and while I was there, I did some doctoral study at Texas Tech, and then was asked to come to Hardin-Simmons University, and this was in the the fall of 1988. So I came to Arden Simmons and was there for 32 years as technical director and associate professor and also chairman of the department, and got to see that program grow and just about triple in size while I was there. And then COVID came around in 2020, and I taught one semester on Zoom, and being a technical person, teaching a class on Zoom, this doesn't work really well. And I was 72 at the time. So I said, okay, I think it's time to retire. So I did. Of course, during COVID, you can't do a whole lot. But in the spring of 2022, I was asked to design a set at Abilene Community Theater. And that's the first real involvement I had with ACT. Of course, living in Abilene since 1988, I'd gone to shows there. I was actually serving on the board some, but more in an advisory capacity rather than getting in and getting my hands dirty, you know, doing stuff. So I designed that set. And then after that, I continued to work there as a volunteer, as a board member. And I don't know how many sets I've designed there since then, but just about every other show, wind up designing a set or designing lights or running lights. And I'm now currently back on the board, and I'm in charge of our facilities, which means, you know, keeping things running as smoothly as possible. If it breaks, fix it, you know, one of those kind of things. So I've been doing that for about a year and a half as facilities chairman. We just celebrated our 70th year. It was formed in 1954, and the building we're in currently was built in 1958. So it really provides a great outlet for the community. Being a college professor for a total of 36 years, I've taught a lot of students, and a lot of them will either major or minor in theater or just come and participate. And they may turn up being a math major or an English teacher, but they still have a desire to do theater. They want theater as an outlet, and that's what community theater does. And we've got, even on our board, we have doctors and lawyers and accountants, retired theater people like me. Charlie Hugel designed this set. He was at McMurray as technical director. I built the set as technical director at Arden Simmons, and then Gary Varner painted the set, and he's technical director at ACU. Mm-hmm. So all three technical directors for all three schools, all of us retired, put in some time there. Scott Miller is the director for the Streetcar Named Desire. Got a really good cast. They've been rehearsing for several weeks now. And it goes on the last weekend of October, first weekend of November.
We recorded Larry's story in Abilene. This is the West Texas Dispatch. Independent filmmaking has always been about creativity, resilience, and bold storytelling. And this fall, Abilene is getting its own spotlight on that spirit with the very first Abilene Frontier Film Festival. Set against the backdrop of Frontier, Texas, the festival runs October 3rd and 4th and features a full lineup of screenings, panels, and special events designed to bring filmmakers and audiences together. It's a chance to experience the diversity of independent cinema while celebrating that pioneering spirit that makes those stories possible. To tell us more about the vision behind the festival and what attendees can expect, here's KACU's Alexis Jones in conversation with festival organizer Cody Toll.
Okay, Cody, so tell me, where did you get the idea to have this festival, and really, what's the mission behind it?
So I got the idea to start a film festival after, so me being an independent filmmaker, I've submitted my own work to lots of film festivals and gone and participated at different film festivals across Texas and outside of Texas. And I always felt that there was always kind of something lacking with a lot of the film festivals. Either they just weren't organized real well, or I felt like they just didn't really bring anything for filmmakers. They didn't allow for a lot of collaboration or socializing between filmmakers.
Right.
And so that's something I wanted to bring with this film festival, is just an opportunity for different people from across the state to come together and kind of build more of a film community out here in West Texas.
Yeah. So what does that look like? Like, how are they building that community?
So the first thing that I wanted to focus with on the film festival was that we have a Texas category, which is going to bring in a lot of Texas filmmakers. And then we also have a second category that we accepted submissions for, which was for big country residents. So anyone that is a big country resident that is a filmmaker or just wants to kind of dabble in film was able to submit to that category, and it's going to be considered and going up against other films and other filmmakers that are in the, I believe it's 12 counties that make up the big country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yes.
Okay. So tell me, for the people that aren't entering a film or haven't entered a film but are just going to watch, what can they expect?
Well, they can expect to see either maybe family or friends that have a film in the festival, or maybe just get to experience more of what the Texas scene is bringing. So over the past 5 or 6 years now, we've seen a really big growth of the film industry here in Texas. And so now we're kind of getting to see more Texas-centric films. And so we're getting to kind of experience what the Texas film seems like now. I would say that they should come out to support local filmmakers here in the big country, and also just to come out and support Texas filmmakers as a whole, because it is something that I think brings a lot of value to Abilene, and also just helps get a nice community event going that I think a lot of people can come out to and have fun.
Yeah, and tell the people when and where this event is going to be.
So this event is going to be at Frontier, Texas on October 3rd and 4th. It will happen from 6 to 11 p.m. on both days. And the first day will be multiple screenings at two different scenes or screens.
This has been the West Texas Dispatch. Thanks for tuning in. West Texas Dispatch is available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You can find it on the KACU mobile app or kacu.org. We had help this week from our team of producers, Heather Claiborne and Alexis Jones, and our digital editor, Calvin Claiborne. Special thanks to JC Gamble, who wrote our theme. We hope you've enjoyed getting to know this show over the last 8 months. If you like what you hear, please help to keep it on the air here at KACU. Here's how.
Visit kacu.org and use the donate button or donate on the mobile app.